Welcome to the Delling Pod with me, James Dellingpole. And I know I say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but I'm not excited this week because, well, we'll find out in a moment why. Let's have a word from one of our sponsors. You may have noticed that gold has been doing pretty well recently. In the last year, I think it's increased in value in sterling terms by around 50%. And if you'd bought gold when I first started recommending it on adverts like this, you would have certainly more than doubled your money. Now, a lot of you are probably thinking, is it too late? Have I missed the boat? Well, I can't definitively answer that question. Nobody can. But if I had to guess, I would say gold has got some way to go. And yeah, sure, there's going to be corrections, but you really ought to be owning physical gold for lots and lots of, not paper gold, obviously. You should be owning physical gold. Now, there are two ways of owning gold. Either you can actually own it, keep it in a vault or in your own home. There are risks, obviously, with keeping it in your own home. You know, what if burglars come, whatever. The problem with keeping it in a vault is that you then get paid a storage fee. But there is another way of owning physical gold and actually getting paid interest on it, unusually. And that is with a company that I've recommended before, and I use them myself. They're called Monetary Metals. Monetary Metals lets you earn a yield on your gold, paid in gold. Right now, you can earn up to 4% annual yield paid in physical gold ounces, not dollars or pounds. Instead of just storing gold and paying vault fees, your gold actually earns more gold over time. Monetary Metals connects gold owners with real productive businesses like refiners or jewelers that lease the gold. That's how they can pay interest, by the way. So they lease the gold and they pay yields back in gold. This is a way to compound your wealth in ounces of gold. There are no storage or insurance fees charged while your metal is earning yield. You can open an account with 10 ounces of gold and start earning yield right away. You stay in control, deploy how much of your gold you want into lease opportunities. In today's inflationary environment, saving in paper currency means losing purchasing power. Earning in gold means growing your real wealth. Go to the link in the description below, or go to monetary, that's monetary-metals.com/Dellingpole/ to learn more about how to participate and start earning a return on honest money again with Monetary Metals. Welcome back to the Delling Pod. Guest, Dick.
Hello, brother. I literally haven't spoken to you pretty much since the last podcast. Maybe we spoke briefly. Just messages on the family group chat. So this is...
It's become a bit of an affliction, hasn't it? It's become...
It's a thingy we've made for ourselves.
A rod we've made for our own backs.
Did you
like the way that before we started, I didn't say anything?
I didn't think my mic was working. No, my headphones. I nearly couldn't make today. Do you know why?
Something to do with Orthodox calendar.
No. Better than that. Outer space right now. I'm on a mission for UK Space Inc. And I'm actually broadcasting live from really near the moon.
I see it now.
Did you read the clues in the room?
How much did Marmite pay you for that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well,
some of our rations must have got loose from the special cargo nets we keep all our food in, it's drifting across the room.
While you're up there, I've always wanted to see this.
Yeah?
Can you show me what happens when you have a piss in zero gravity?
I can do it for you right now, actually.
Yeah.
Go on. Oh, no, I just don't need to go, because they give us special special drinks.
Antidiuretic.
And that's what they're calling them. Yeah. It's amazing, though. And if I didn't have my space beret on, my head would literally explode right now.
What?
Yeah, because we're under intense pressure in here at the same time as being in zero gravity.
I believe you totally, because you are,
so you should.
You are exactly like, I mean, the Artemis 2 crew were in very similar situations to you, and coming through as clearly from space.
Well, what they've done, the UK Space Agency wanted to make me feel as much at home and relaxed, because you can't perform space stuff unless you're relaxed.
They let you bring your helmets and stuff.
They recreated all my home environment for me.
In terms of weight, are they the same weight as the actual Earth-born counterparts?
No, that they're completely without weight right now, because we're far enough away from the planet Earth for them to have zero gravity.
You make me feel such an idiot. Because,
well, I'm here to educate, James, and, you know, I don't want to patronise you, but you just need to look at the science when these things crop up.
I think what you're saying is that I'm lacking in basic physics.
I didn't want to use that phrase, but seeing as you went there, yeah. But I'm here to help.
Well, anyway.
Ask me anything about space.
Did you see? Is it true that the flag that the Americans planted, that Neil Armstrong planted, is that still there?
It's still visible and it's still flapping in the moon wind.
Right. And what about the mirrors, the reflective mirrors that you, well, obviously reflective, but...
I shaved with one this morning.
Did you?
Yeah. I looked down on the surface of the planet Earth, and fortunately the sun was in the right place, and I...
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a good point, because I've noticed that the crew are often, well, impressively clean shaven.
Yeah. They've got space razors.
But you'd have thought the little bits of
stubble,
yeah, would just be all over the shop.
It doesn't matter. Anything can float around in our cabins. People overestimate just how clean we have to be up there. It's an absolute pigsty, I tell you. There's turds floating around in doggy bags, and
but when I mean, I don't know, maybe it's going to be different when you come back. You may be just covered in shit. I would hope so.
And Marmite,
and space piss. When you finally have a space, but
oh, sorry, there it goes again.
That is just spooky. This is such an opportunity.
So many questions. Can I just tell you about how we've worked out the oceans cling on to the globe of Earth?
Yes. How do they?
It's spinning so fast.
Yeah.
You know when a tennis ball spins and all the water goes off?
Yeah.
Well, when the tennis ball's big enough, the water actually is attracted to it and sticks onto it. Otherwise, there'd be sharks floating everywhere, wouldn't there?
There would be.
How
space
bad
sharks.
Would that be?
That would be quite exciting.
Yeah.
But so what you're saying is that if we could make a tennis ball as big as planet Earth, as I'm now learning to call it,
or even the moon, it doesn't even need to be as big as Earth. But if it's at least as big as the moon, then shit will stick to it.
But is it? There must be a kind of cutoff point. I mean, like
there is. Yeah.
What's it? Does it have a name? This cutoff point between the sizes, where
scale. Anything smaller than the moon, forget about it. It's just a ball. But once it reaches moon size,
but there's no water sticks. On the moon. Maybe there is. Are you about to tell me?
We're due to go around the back of it soon, and I've got a feeling there might be a big ocean back there. No one's ever been around the back of it though. The backside of the moon.
Artemis crew had two crew.
We haven't yet heard back from them. We're up at the same time. Have they landed safely?
They did. It's good to be the first to break the news to you. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so relieved, because it's quite a dangerous mission.
They made some great speeches.
Yeah.
Really good, including one where the poor woman actinaut, her mic broke down. And so she had to kind of freestyle at one point.
Right.
And she,
like a rap.
After an embarrassing pause, she did. She freestyled.
Okay.
Done.
And nice.
The black gentleman, he went to his...
Blackstronaut.
The blackstronaut. to the estate. Well, it's not like I say housing estate. I mean, it's not like a project. It's not like The Wire or anything. Mm. Although you might, if you were racist, you might think that. it's a kind of, you know, a nice sort of suburban sort of housing. And he stood in the middle and made a speech in his blue space costume.
That's so sweet.
Harmony and stuff.
Because that's what you get when you get up here. You just think, you know, if only we could all get along. You look back on the marble-shaped planet that is Earth.
Yeah.
Did I mention it was round, globey?
Marble. He's in marble shape, which is, yeah.
Yeah, you look, well, we astronauts sometimes call it the blue marble.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is it blue, little, then?
The sea bits are blue and the land bits are green.
That would make sense. So
and then
really,
there's clouds.
Technically, more accurate, it's the blue and green marble.
Okay, marbling effect.
Marbling, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, we just look on it and think, we've got one planet, guys. If only we could all just get along. So that's going to be my message when and if I get back, God willing.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, they seem to be, given the technical difficulties, here's what's puzzled me. Given that Elon Musk's rockets often seem to be malfunctioning.
Hmm.
When they haven't got anybody aboard, but whenever there seems to be a crew on board, unless they're Gus Grissom, and unless they've given a press conference and put a lemon on the module and to mock NASA, they get blown up, don't they? But generally, the crew seem to get back safely.
We consider Elon to be a little bit of an amateur, yeah. So obviously NASA and the UK Space Agency, UXA, we're professionals. We've got the budget. We safety is our priority. That's one of our mottos. Safety first.
Where are you going to land?
Off the coast of Great Yarmouth.
That would
obviously
make sense.
It's not a precise business when you're hitting Earth at 300 million miles an hour and your re-entry craft is burning up. It's difficult to be precise, but we reckon Great Yarmouth, possibly further up into Norfolk.
Presumably it's not actually 3 million miles. It's
estimate
333, possibly, or 33
miles an hour. Yeah. Take it slow, we say.
You keep changing your story.
You'd have to prove that. We've scienced this to death, James. Let me assure you.
People can rewind, Dick, and they can check. So before you took off, I gather, you had you had your first Orthodox Easter.
I did. Or Pascha, as we call it, which is Passover.
Because
they've got nothing to do with Easter. It's all about Passover.
Are you serious?
Well, Pascha is Passover in Greek. Yeah.
So you mean basically the Greek Orthodox is not to put too fine a point on it, Jewish?
No. We're kind of almost like the opposite of that.
Is that right?
Not big on Zionism.
Right.
That's probably an underestimate.
I actually learned, because I knew you were going to be on the podcast, and I knew it was going to be Easter. So I learned a special Greek Easter song for, I think it is anyway, you can tell me.
Right.
Okay. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad.
That's right. That's what we sing at Easter.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's very
moving. Do you know what it means?
We could share this. No, what does it mean?
It means he is risen.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Actually, how do you say it?
What, in Greek?
Yeah.
I'm new to all this. You can't challenge me in that way.
I'm going to have Orthosis onto the podcast.
Yeah, good. You know, I saw that you met up with her the other day.
I met up with Orthosis. And she told me such a good story.
I think she will bring a lot of conversions. They'll think, if there's orthosis is like that, count me in.
I'm going to let people discover how wonderful orthosis is. But we went to this Persian restaurant, and the woman who ran the restaurant came out and said, completely unbidden, she said, "You have a very good energy." She said, not to me, to Izzy. You know, she said, right. You are very, and it's true. Everyone loves Izzy, don't they?
Yeah, no, she's yeah, she's got a gravitational force not unlike Earth.
Yeah, exactly.
Which like that segue
is a global thing. Planet.
Yep, global planet.
So you stood for 3 hours and almost passed out.
Well, the mistake I made, and Izzy will vouch for this, was doing a reenactment the same day in North Wales. So I don't know how you are with being outdoors all day, but I find it twice as exhausting as not being outdoors all day. Lots and lots of fresh air and activity. You are wiped out in the evening. There's no question.
Try it on a horse, jumping over hedges.
Exactly so.
Yeah.
More of which later, no doubt, but we'll get on to that in a bit. So I'm in North Wales at a reenactment, and I looked at the map and I thought, I can make it down to Shrewsbury, and then on to Worcester the following day. And it's a midnight vigil, so the service starts at 11:15. Shrewsbury is our big sister church. It's hundreds of people there. So service starts at 11:15. Finishes at 2:15, and then at midnight you're all processing out into the streets to, and they ring the bells, and the service carries on in the square, and it's great. It's a big Shrewsbury thing, and it was all wonderful, but I was already knackered and wiped out.
How many were there, would you say, in the service?
Well, I think they said last year there were like 700, but I think there are about 500 this year. I'm not sure. Not everyone stays for the whole thing, as you observed with your Russian thing. People come and go, especially if you're born to it. So the sort of Eastern Europeans, they'll come and do their bit, and then they'll go. And but you know, that's not necessarily how you do things. So, you know, staying for the full whack was definitely the done thing.
Apparently, I heard from Izzy, there are kind of two schools of thought or two streams within Orthodoxy in Britain anyway. There's the kind of the old school who are quite relaxed, and then there's the converts and the newcomers who are filled with zeal and
yeah, well, it's self-evident, isn't it? It's going to be, you're going to get that in anything. I mean, I should imagine new convert Catholics are just the same. You know, you're going to go for it full. You're not going to aim to be a sort of like, yeah, I'm a little bit Greek Orthodox, don't fast much, and I don't stay for the whole service. You're not going to go for that, are you? You're going to go for the full thing. And
you've got to have it in the blood, I think, to do that, because you've got your kind of, net advantage or whatever.
I mean, maybe over time you get a bit lax, but obviously, yeah, the zeal of the new convert is not a new thing, is it?
No, it isn't. How many beards were there?
Many beards. Many were the beards.
What percentage of the men would you say had beards?
Obviously not all, but a larger percentage you'll find in certainly in the Church of England or any average crowd.
Did I tell you about the horror of our Easter service?
No. Oh, yes, you did. We must have spoken at some point. I think you probably did it in the group chat.
Not on a podcast.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So that was wasted, wasn't it, that conversation? So, just very, very briefly, before Christmas, I remember the church warden or the verger or whatever she is coming to me and saying, we're having real trouble getting a vicar for the Easter service. Do you know any? I said, well, problem is Easter. It's kind of when they're all a bit busy, Vivian. So anyway, come Easter, and all the local, we've got 7 churches in our parish now, and normally we sort of share, we mix it up. We don't all have services simultaneously, except at Easter when everyone insists on having just to show that their church still can cut it. So we had our Easter service, and we got I think a deputy vicar, female, from somewhere in town. And this deputy vicar, female, was evangelical. And you could see that she came into our church and was thinking, I'm going to show these fuddy-duddy Book of Common Prayer people how Christianity is really done. And of course, we're all going, no, no. The low point, one of the low points for me was when we all went up to take communion. And we've got this, it's cool, right? You've seen the church, it's old, full of old stuff. And people have been worshipping there since the 12th century. And we've got this chalice, a silver chalice from the 16th century, quite old. And our bells are the oldest in the country, oldest full set of bells, 1440 they were cast. And we go up to take communion. And normally, if you've got an organist, then the organist will play some sacred music. Otherwise, it's silence. But she'd brought along her husband, who was even more evangelical than he was, with his mobile phone and a kind of a mini speaker. And she started playing kind of evangelical modern Christian God is, you know, Jesus is our friend. Jesus, come into my heart. Well, I mean, you know the kind of thing. And it really killed the communion, I tell you. I mean, and the only way we could take revenge, because some of the elderly parishioners were sort of going, oh, this is rather different, isn't it? Refreshingly different.
Refreshingly different.
No, it's not. It really isn't. It's horrible. But the bit where she invites us all to make a sign of peace to one another. Huh. And already in the Sea of Eels, old school style, we're all a bit kind of, yes, hello, peace to be with you. But this time, everyone just went. Everyone just went in a kind of, they were playing musical statues.
Well, just spontaneously.
Well, it seemed to be spontaneous. I mean, there was, we didn't like being sprinkled with her water. That was one problem. We didn't like it when she went.
That's quite high church.
She didn't wee-wee on us. No, well, yeah, but you know, it's, I don't know what, it was a sort of amalgam of all sorts of weird stuff that we weren't familiar with and didn't want.
Right.
Anyway, so that was the Easter.
We had rather different Easters then, didn't we?
We did. I think I would have rather been at yours. Yeah.
Well, you've got to try one sometime. I mean, it's sort of...
Totally, I will.
It goes in waves, and that's true of all Orthodox services as far as I can see so far. At one moment, you're transfixed by the beautiful chanting, and then a few minutes later, you might be looking at your watch and thinking, it's really got to be two more hours of this, and then you're back in it again. And it sort of, comes in waves. And of course, I don't understand it all yet, and I'm probably not going to for several years, but it's so completely unlike any other service that you've been to. Not that you've been to, because you've done the ones in Russia. But yeah, it's very, very different.
I still think it might be a good idea if Dick and James do Moscow or Moscow.
We've flipped from Israel to Moscow now.
Yeah.
All our detractors will be saying, ah, now we see their true colours.
Well, it's interesting, Dick. So... You don't seem to follow the politics of kind of that Marmite thing. It's amazing. It's spontaneously turned around to face the camera now.
Well, it's a very well trained piece of CGI.
Whoever make Marmite are going to be very happy with however much they put.
Shall I take it down at this point? Because it is annoying me. Oh, it's going to float off. Over there.
Oh. That's amazing.
I thought
I saw strings there, but
we'll Photoshop those out later.
Okay. There is this thing going on at the moment, which I find rather tiresome. It's this argument between the various, it's kind of a podcast, a wake podcast war, where people are talking about multipolar versus, I don't know, unipolar or bipolar or something. So there seems to be this ideological war between the ones who think that the world is being run by a sort of unified evil force, which just wants one world government. And, well, basically, they're all in on it. Xi, Putin, whoever's now surviving, whoever survived long enough to be president of Iran, Netanyahu, they're all in on it. The BRICS, uh-huh. the BRICS is an artificial construct. And it was kind of invented by a guy from Goldman Sachs. So, you know, how are you going to trust it? So I do get that. And I sympathize with they're all evil and there's nothing we can do and there's no place to go and there's no haven we can all flee to like the imaginary Russia that we might have fantasized about but doesn't exist really. And then there are sort of the people they're accusing of being of creating this multipolar myth. So UK column has been accused of.
I noticed that Chinese that blew up this last week. I didn't quite get to the bottom of it.
But yes, was it Debbie Evans or somebody?
Yeah, I think so.
I kind of don't want to really play in. I don't want to fight in this fight.
I don't think one has to. I think it's best to keep a distance and let them sort it out themselves. We were talking about it on Third Wednesday the other day, certainly the UK column thing. And we know that UK column have to play a careful game and they're never going to be the most in-your-face, rabbit-hole, tinfoil hat organisation because they are deliberately measured and, I suppose, within the rabbit-hole world, quite conservative, but which is the worst criticism I could level at them, really. They've done a lot of really great work. So whatever they're being accused of, I can't really quite get my head around it.
Yeah. I mean, I've been struggling. I've been writing a piece about this. One of my titles was How to Spot a Wrong'un, and another one was Everyone is a Baddie. And I'm not sure which one I'm going to go with yet. Everyone is a Baddie was titled Except for Me and Dick and Hell, and maybe you too, but how would I know? Something like that. And I was sort of talking a bit about this. I think most of us in this space, which I think is quite an appropriate word under the circumstances, most of us who are awake and down the rabbit hole, will kind of watch an episode of UK column if they're on a topic that interests us, but we won't be going, how can I trust you when you won't even talk about chemtrails? In fact, you've got germ warfare actively campaigning against the chemtrails, a real narrative by getting on. I had a go at Germ about this. So there's a podcast that I think it is a flaw, a chink in his armor. Possibly it means he's evil and control opposition. I don't know, but I'm not thinking that. You know, when I do a podcast with Germ, I'm not thinking, well, I'd better watch what I say, because you're obviously a wrong one. I'm thinking, oh, let's have a great chat, Germ, about stuff we have in common. And the same with if a podcaster I liked suddenly said something I disagreed with, like if they turned violently against Flat Earth, say, or I don't know, I'd just be going, oh. Don't agree with you there. I won't listen to you on that subject. But I wouldn't be going, I cannot trust this person ever again. I think we're grazers, aren't we? Most of us. We just sort of graze.
Yeah, no, I think that nails it. And also the fallout between our various friendship groups. And I think you know what I'm alluding to there.
No, I don't know. Do you want to give me all the details now and embarrass yourself and me and everyone else? No,
let's not do that. It's kind of like over one niche area, and if you fall on the niche areas, then you might as well give up the struggle altogether, because we're none of us going to be on the same page with everything
apart from me. I mean, in terms of rightness, I'm like the touchstone.
Yeah.
I'm like the philosopher's stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Harry Potter.
No, not Harry Potter that was written by Diana Mosley and somebody else on a train.
Well, this is,
when, I think so.
Have you done a podcast?
I've read a Miles Mathis about this.
Right.
You've come across Miles Mathis, right?
No.
I think he's probably a CIA collective, but he's quite good at dropping. There's a few sites out there which are remarkably well informed and come up with so much good information in such quantities at one time that you think this can't be the work of a one man operation. This is a team, and there, I think there are different groups in the cabal, but clearly a tiny section of the cabal has been charged with providing bombshell information to the awake so that the information is out there. They've got to tell us, haven't they?
Yeah, that is. But then you have to sift that away from misinformation.
That's a problem as well.
And obviously, in amongst it all, you've got to have genuine nuggets of absolute fact. And imagine sitting on one of those massive bombshell facts and realizing that no one's going to believe it, because they'll either say the pictures are AI or the information has been already disproved. But you know, it might be one of the crazier things. I was going to say aliens, but we know that's they're demons or what have you. Yeah, but It's frustrating because we'll be encountering things all the time. I wonder how many times we've actually hit something that is absolute bombshell stuff and 100% true, but we've had to brush it aside.
No, I think I do this all the time, Dick, and I never brush it aside because I am like a laser-guided missile seeking out the truth. And actually, am I a laser-guided missile? Maybe that's...
You might be more of a Patriot battery out everything that comes in.
I don't want to be one of those Israeli...
Nope.
Iron Dome, you mean?
The Patriot was slightly different, wasn't it? It comes in a battery.
I used to be interested in this kind of thing, and now I'm just thinking it's all their stuff.
Yeah, it's all stuff that's going to be used against us.
Mm. I'm trying to think what other, yesterday I saw this very amusing thing, on the theme of they have to tell you what they're doing. Do you know what it says on the bottom of all globes, you know, like the globes you have in your class, in school classroom?
No.
It says not for educational purposes.
Why?
Because they have to tell you. They have to tell you. It's the karmic rule book. It's very amusing. It's like they are. I've mentioned this before that there are certain things they have to do. So you have to give them permission to cross your threshold. You know, you've got to invite the vampire across your threshold. That's the analog from literature, and it's. In Christian terms, it makes sense that the devil only does his work with your permission. It's like when Dr. Faustus or Faust sells his soul, it's his decision. The devil can't just come along and nick it.
Mm. Well, it's all down to the devil doesn't make you take drugs or have casual sex with strangers or any of these things, but he makes it bloody tempting. He puts temptation in front of you, and it's down to you to make that decision. So, yeah, it's all about your own person. It's your freedom to choose in the end, which God has always been really big on right from the creation of man. We've got to have that freedom, otherwise it means nothing.
Well, so, but do you reckon, God made... Obviously, God made stuff like dandelions with their healing roots,
mm-hmm.
and healing leaves and healing everything. Do you think God had a hand in MDMA, or is that a kind of...
I think it's got to be a lot of science, as far as I can work out, is man getting close to working out the minimal amount of how God did various things. So finding out what our circulatory system is like and finding out how a heart works, not to the point where we're clever enough to completely make a human from scratch, but we've got a pretty good understanding of how things work. And I think stuff like MDMA would be a case of you're already using stuff that's pre-existing in nature and just turning it into a pill.
Global warming is a massive con. There is no evidence whatsoever that man-made climate change is a problem, that it's going to kill us, that we need to amend our lifestyle in order to deal with it. It's a non-existent problem. But how do you explain this stuff to your normie friends? Well, I've just brought out the revised edition, my 2012 classic book, Watermelons, which captures the story of how some really nasty people decided to invent the global warming scare in order to fleece you, to take away your freedoms, to take away your land. It's a shocking story. I wrote it, as I say, in 2011, actually, the first edition came out. And it's a snapshot of a particular era, the era when the people behind the climate change scam got caught red-handed, tinkering with the data, torturing till it screamed, in a scandal that I helped christen ClimateGate. So I give you the background to the skullduggery that went on in these seats of learning where these supposed experts were informing us, we've got to act now. I rumbled their scam. I then asked the question, okay, if it is a scam, who's doing this? And why? It's a good story. I've kept the original book pretty much as is, but I've written two new chapters, one at the beginning and one at the end, explaining how it's even worse than we thought. I think it still stands up. I think it's a good read. Obviously I'm biased, but I'd recommend it. You can buy it from jamesdellingpole.co.uk/shop. You'll probably find that one. Just go to my website and look for it, jamesdellingpole.co.uk. And I hope it helps keep you informed and gives you the material you need to bring round all those people who are still persuaded that, oh, it's a disaster, we must amend our ways and appease the gods, appease Mother Gaia. No, we don't. It's a scam.
A lot of science, as far as I can work out, is man getting close to working out the minimal amount of how God did various things. So finding out what our circulatory system is like and finding out how a heart works, not to the point where we're clever enough to completely make a human from scratch, but we've got a pretty good understanding of how things work. And I think stuff like MDMA would be a case of you're already using stuff that's pre-existing in nature and just turning it into a pill in its simplest form.
Right. I mean, I'm not sure about this. I'm thinking about, for example, weed. Well, weed, obviously God made it in its original form, but we've bred all these super strong hybrid weeds and we've sort of genetically modified it to make it more potent and to increase the THC content. Now, is that godly? Does God only approve, or does he even approve of weed that's grown and you find the grown by the road in the Congo, as I did once? Or
I struggle with the weed thing myself, because clearly the Bible is pro wine.
Yes, Psalm 104. Yeah?
Lots of wine. And it even references strong drink. So it knows the stuff stronger than wine. Yeah?
Yeah.
So Clearly that's part of biblical life and is expected to be part of ours. And certainly in Orthodoxy, they talk about the joy that you get from wine. So a certain amount of intoxication is good, but drunkenness is bad. Therefore, what's weed if not a natural high, intoxicant? You know, it sort of, I would guess that a little bit of weed is okay, but getting absolutely off your tits, not so much.
Thing is, the problem with weed is it does definitely open portals to demons.
Well, so does drunkenness.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I think that's the issue, that if you're drunk, you're likely to sin. But if you're cheerful with the right amount of wine, you're open to friendship and conversation and happiness and laughter. I think it's that fine line, and it's not necessarily all that fine. I think it's about your own discernment as well, isn't it? I mean, do you feel like you're sinning terribly when you have a little smoke? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I do wonder about it. Mainly,
I don't think we're going to answer the question, and I'm sure priests would have answers for it, but I doubt if it's in the Bible.
Yes.
But fortunately, in Orthodoxy, we have a lot more than just the Bible. They constantly fall back on this. They say, look, we've got all the scriptures, not just about the Bible. So there's a lot of other stuff as well. You know, the
Philokalia.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a biggie. I only found out about that recently. How come you know more about Orthodoxy than me? Because you read stuff.
I'm interested in this kind of thing. Well, actually, that was Tanya Edwards who turned me on to the Philokalia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's very interesting. And yeah. Well, don't forget, I've been exposed to Orthodox things for a long time since going.
Well, I think
to
it's partly you that pushed me to it with the various guests you've had, and you know, people like Rod Dreher and things like that. So,
he's too normy there, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's a name that keeps cropping up.
Yeah, I'm suspicious of names that keep cropping up.
Yeah, there we go again.
There's clearly the way Christianity has been co-opted by the forces of darkness. I mean, that guy Hegseth, for example, in America. Is it Pete Hegseth? All these alleged Christians surrounding Trump are clearly
not
at best Luciferians. Oh, at worst Satanists. I mean, not that there's actually that much of a distinction, but I mean, it's horrible seeing this vision of Christianity that they're representing. And
I wince whenever I see it, because I think there'll be a lot of people out there going, yeah, see, that's you, that is, that's what you're doing. And it's like, it so isn't, which is why I quite like to keep my religious side now away from my politics side. I really try not to do any politics to do with church. And I'm finding a lot of people within my church are kind of like of the same view as me politically, but we just don't do it at church. Church is all about the God side of our lives, which should be the dominant side of our lives. And I think the more things turn to shit, the more you can draw comfort from that. You know, knowing that you're not going to be discussing, is there anyone worth voting for or anything like that? Because it's just not what you're there for. It's not what you're at church for.
Yes. Well, as I keep saying, it is better to trust in the Lord than put any confidence in man. It's better to trust in the Lord than put any confidence in princes. It's.
But you've really got to live that.
Yeah. Yeah,
but not you. If you turn up to your church and find you've got happy clappy, weedy,
well, no, that was just an aberration. Unlucky Easter. Tell me, my recent guilty pleasure, because really one shouldn't watch TV because it's programming and it's the enemy's tool and stuff. But I've really got quite into that German series from 2020. Dark.
Dunkel. Yes, it was your son who insisted I watch that.
And have
watch
you
Dunkel,
got...
Uncle, he said.
How much Dunkel have you got into?
We've done the first two seasons.
Right. So you are quite advanced.
Yeah. It's good viewing. It's like nothing else that's on. So it's sort of, definitely a good one.
It does rain an awful lot.
And it's dunkel as hell, isn't it?
It's dunkel as hell. And there are not many jokes in it.
It's not a laugh a minute, is it?
It's not.
A bit like the Germans. Talking of which.
Yeah.
What's this?
That is a hubcap from a tank.
Yes. And what's the colour?
Is it dunkel? Oh, dunkel.
What's yellow?
Oh, dunkel gelb.
Dunkel gelb. Yes.
Dunkel gelb.
Yeah.
That's. I tell you what, Dick. That is one of the joys of watching Dark. That one get. You remember all these German words?
Yeah.
Well, I do anyway, because I I did it for O level.
Yeah.
And we had a German, well, a very good German speaking German teacher, Mr. Harvey. He used to speak in German most of the lessons. Didn't even bother with the English part. And so even though I only did it for 2 years, I got quite a good grounding in German. Hmm. And it all comes back to me, like Anfang. These words that you can't guess what they mean. There's no way you could guess what Anfang meant.
What is Anfang?
Beginning.
All right.
Or Hole, which is cave, which appears quite a lot.
I get things like gar nicht.
Yeah.
Which is nothing at all.
Yeah. And so it's like doing a Duolingo tape thing, lesson, but with a storyline in it as well.
Yeah.
Too many sex scenes. Too many sex scenes where you suddenly go, and they wake up and it's all been a dream. They seem to have exhausted that trope, rather.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's a very German approach to sex, where even the sex has become a bit horrific.
I don't know. I really quite like the Germans. I like them even more now I realise just how badly they were screwed over by us. In the, well, not literally us, because we weren't working for the satanic cabal, in the First and Second World Wars. I mean, imagine, the First World War is not your fault, and you get blamed for it. You know, and we start killing their sausage dogs and throwing their Bechstein pianos out of the window and stuff. Mm. And we make jokes about people with spikes on their helmets, and we associate it with evil. And yeah, Germans bayonet nuns and rape babies, yeah, and stuff. And then World War II comes along, and you're still recovering from the awful period of hyperinflation when you've been forced to eat your sausage dog. And then World War II breaks out. And this time, you're not just a baddie German, you're a Nazi, you're an actual Nazi. And you've got this man with the moustache who is the worst person in the world ever. And you can never be forgiven by history for having followed this evil man with the moustache. And you're responsible for killing 6 million Jews in these death camps that you deliberately set up to kill the Jews. And everyone knows this. And then... After that, 2 million of you, 2 million of your soldiers get starved to death by the American occupiers in these camps on the Rhine. And then all the years afterwards, you're supposed to go, yes, it was our fault.
I would like to apologize for the conduct of my country during the war.
Yeah. And nobody can go, but we didn't fucking do anything. It wasn't us.
But if you did that, you'd be a Nazi, wouldn't you? You'd be a neo-Nazi.
Yeah.
You'd probably be denied the ability to go shopping or to buy basic provisions. It would absolutely suck to be German.
The fact that the Germans haven't just completely collapsed mentally, that they've still
gone and started another war.
Well, yes, which it'll be blamed on them. Yeah.
Well, they're going to blame us anyway. We might as well start another.
Actually, you're right. Well, they except that, of course, one of the tricks we played on them was to give them this sort of joke Wehrmacht full of really fat people with pop guns. I mean, wasn't that the deal? So Anyway, after the war, the Germans were not very good, apart from their special forces were okay. But I think generally the Germans...
They won't fight in the dark and things like that.
Yeah, they wouldn't fight with uncomfy shoes or nasty green colours, patterns on their uniforms. They preferred, I don't know.
Deutschland 86?
Yeah.
What was the one we watched, that series?
Deutschland 83, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. There was a follow-on. Anyway. Yeah. Can we talk about your finger?
Oh, yeah.
Did people's prayers work for your finger? Because, okay, the last time we spoke about your finger, it was you saying it hasn't healed. They're looking at it and they've realised the bones aren't meshing and I'm going to have to have horrible surgery. Yeah.
And I might have to have it, some bone transplant and No. So, yeah, they took out the wire and he said, oh, it's wobbling. And I said, is that
not
bad?
Not what you want to hear.
And he said, it's not good. And that did not make me at all happy. And then it was like, well, tell me the worst news, Doc. What does this mean? And I sort of got the worst news, which is that, like, if the bone doesn't heal, you've got to have possibly complications. But then I thought, well, I've got to ask people to pray for me. And I got various pieces of advice from various people, including, there's a top hand surgeon in Ireland who follows me called Jack Kelly. And he gave me some advice. And somebody else on Substack gave me some advice. They said, look, of course they're going to have these expectations about how quickly you're going to heal. But healing rates vary tremendously. He said, look, I broke my finger. It took 6 months before it was really started to heal. And because the finger of where a finger is and how it operates, it's very hard to keep it as still as they'd like it to be, optimally. So I've had different reports, and I was thinking, well, the main thing is the trust in God. I'm going next week to have an X-ray to see whether there's been any kind of solidification or whatever the technical term is, knitting, I suppose. The other thing I did, I discovered that there is machines that you can hire, a bone that is used by athletes, and it's made in Canada, and which is actually probably slightly worrying, you know, the land of Carney and President Bieber. But you put a kind of a plate with this squidgy gel on it, attached to a sort of wire machine thing, and it sends this low frequency impulses or something which apparently speed up the healing process.
Right.
So I've got one of those. So that might make a difference. I'm thinking of using some DMSO, which I think might, with some comfort oil. So all is not lost. And then you've got the power of prayer. I'm just thinking, does God really want me to have my finger plaguing me forever? I think he's probably on my side generally. I mean, I would hope. I'm putting my trust in God, really. And the prayers of my lovely listeners.
Well, you know, you've been in mine, obviously, and I do feel for you. I almost didn't want to speak to you for fear that it was just, not that I'd catch it off you, but I just didn't want to. I physically feel the pain when you've got something like that wrong with you. I'm all clutching my finger now because it's just like...
Yeah, I'd say what it is, it's a jolly nuisance, in that there are things I can't do, like I can't garden, I can't go swimming, and all this. It's sort of nice to get a leaf pass that gets you off gardening. At the same time, it's not. You want to be helpful at times, and you want to do some stuff. I had some excitement this morning and last night.
Go on.
the baby tomatoes that I planted, Dick, like,
yeah,
I think we're talking almost 3 weeks ago.
Mm.
And finally, two of them hatched.
Right. We're just talking seedlings here,
seedlings,
not tomato plants.
Yeah, I know. Most people have got their tomato seedlings are already up there, I should think, probably. I hadn't factored in how long these little buggers take to
germinate.
The thing is, these are the special tomatoes that I grew last year. So they're the seeds from the special tomatoes.
Are they the ones that are really gnarly and big and quite dense?
One that I'm happy has sprouted so far is called Green Giant.
Right.
And can you guess what colour Green Giant are?
Are they green?
Yeah, and can you guess what the size characteristic of them is?
On the large side.
Yeah.
How very aptly named.
Right on both counts. And the amazing thing, you would think a giant green tomato would be actually pretty disgusting, and they're purely for the kind of amusement value of being a large green tomato that is ripe. The downside of them is that you can't tell when they're ripe.
Right.
You can't tell by looking at them when they're ripe, because they look unripe all the time.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They taste absolutely delicious.
I think you gave me some when I was over.
Oh.
And it was like, it just ceased to be a tomato at that point. It's like another sort of divine fruit that you bake. But worth the effort.
Are you ready for the food shortages which are coming imminently?
You know what? You upset me and panicked me when you said you do realize there's going to be severe food shortages. Start panic buying now.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't say panic buying, but okay. So we're going to go through a ghastly period where food will be either prohibitively expensive or just not available at all.
Yeah.
How
you won't be able to wipe your bottom.
How long will you throw me now with the
well, you
bottom?
Won't. That's the thing. Have you got a bidet?
No.
I think everyone should right now. If only I'd brought in a job lot of bidets and said 10% off
bidet
now.
Bidet futures.
B-Day. I have not got a B-Day.
Right.
But I can tell you now, Dick, I wish I did have one. Because can you imagine how annoying it would be if you have
to... hang on. They're going to do us out of bog roll again.
Probably.
Is that going to be the way they introduce...
Look, okay. Let me take a step back. First of all, how do I know this is real? Well, my friends at the Good Food Project. Do you remember Good Food Project? They do kind of organic food and supplies to awake people. Lovely people. They sponsored one of my events, my live events in London, and they're good. I mean, I like them. In fact, I'll give them a quick plug. They haven't paid for this or anything, but goodfoodproject.co.uk. Anyway, the reason I know about this is that I'm on their mailing list, and they sent me out this email saying, you will have been getting our food security emails for a while now. We have been nudging you, hinting at it, weaving the message into pretty much everything we send you. Some of you have been listening and acting on it, and that is great. But today we're going to be completely black and white about it. The moment we have been worried about has arrived, and we do not say that lightly. If you value having someone you trust working for you in the food game, and we hope that is why you shop with us, please read this carefully. We buy organic food wholesale every single week. We deal with suppliers and producers directly. We see what is happening to the food chain and the food delivery chain before it reaches your doorstep. And everything we are seeing right now is pointing in one direction, up. That is where we are right now. It is not going to change anytime soon. Here is what the data is saying. Not last year, not last month, right now. And then it just says food price inflation at least 9% by the end of 2026. Brent crude up to $100 a barrel. Anyway, oh yes, and here we are. Both Parcel Force and Royal Mail are putting up their fuel and energy surcharges by over 50% next month. Obviously, that's going to be priced in by all the suppliers of all the Amazon and stuff. Anyway, take a step back. Why is this happening? Well, the official excuse is the war. Yeah, the war in Iran, which, of course, like the Iranians totally provoked, didn't they? Because they were doing so much bad stuff that they had to be stopped.
Well, they were constantly provoking us with these murders and assassinations, and it was completely unnecessary.
They were just out of control. They were wearing black mullah hats and chanting Shiite stuff and.
Shiite,
and they were going to the mosque, and they were being a big country with lots of history and architecture, and they had it coming. They needed to be taken down, bastards. Making Fesenjan, suspiciously delicious chicken dish with pomegranate juice.
Suspiciously delicious.
Yeah. So obviously, Trump had to go in and just kill schoolgirls.
Along with our greatest ally, Israel.
With our greatest ally. They were fantastic. They've been killing them, lots of them, and it's great because death is obviously what we're into. So that's what the normies are being told. Well, they say, most of the world's terrorism was sponsored by it. I hope you realise that, right?
And it's a price worth paying. If I have to go without a few things for a short period of time, then that's a price I'm willing to pay to get rid of this terror state.
Yeah, where are your cojones, Dick? If you're against this stuff, why? Man up. Man up. We should be going out to kill these people for their...
And committing our own minuscule army to this war, exactly. Of course.
So that's what the normies are being told, and you've got surprise, the Strait of Hormuz is being closed. I mean, no one could have foreseen that.
If only they war-gamed that situation and thought, what's the most likely thing that will happen if we go for all-out war with Iran?
So now everyone's got in their heads the official drama. It means that they are free, they being the powers that be. Are free to do whatever they like and say, what could we do? It's the war. I mean, you can't fill up your car. Well, it's not us, nothing to do with us. We never said, did we? We want to stop you driving, or we never said we wanted to keep you in 15-minute cities, or we never said that the planet was being killed by your driving. Did we? We never did. It's all the fault of this war.
And we haven't been shutting down farms and offering to buy out any farmer that wants to sell up and stop the business of producing food for an increasingly large population.
We haven't invented bird flu and used that lie as an excuse to
wipe out entire flocks.
Wipe out these barns full of birds with foam. Just let them...
That suffocates them.
Suffocate them. We haven't done any of that because we wouldn't. No. Because we love the environment. As we keep telling you. So that's what they're going to get. It's like their kind of teenage wank list. They're just going to be. It's going to be all their fantasies are going to come true at once because they can just say yeah, mad President Trump. And meanwhile, you know what's going to happen. Miri's right about this, and a few other people are saying this as well. Trump has done he served his purpose now. He went in, he gave them the war that they wanted. He can now be retired, and so he probably will be assassinated. Or he'll just, I don't know, I mean...
Exit
he'll find
stage
some
left.
I mean, that stuff about... When I saw the images of him being Jesus and healing Epstein or whatever it was, that image... I wasn't going, this is outrageous. This is just a step too far. I was thinking, yeah, nice work, guys. You're really, really, you're doing very well with this setting him up as this crazy that upsetting everybody on Easter.
Some would
say
too well. Some would say it's kind of like, yeah, guys, we get it. He's mad.
Yeah. Exactly. So I look at this stuff and I just go, it's just... How can anyone fall for that? How can anyone get angry about it when it's obviously all so fake? I mean, I almost, until I, the beginning segment of this podcast, I actually thought the Artemis 2 thing wasn't real either.
No.
I did.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. But, so, whatever you think is actually happening in the Middle East right now, I think personally, I think a lot of these places you're seeing being blown up on in photographs and stuff are not really being blown up, or they are sites previously earmarked for demolition being blown up. I think there's a lot of that going on. Are real people dying? Probably. Are some nice places being destroyed that shouldn't be destroyed? Yes, probably. Are refineries being blown up? Well, yeah, probably, but it's hard to gauge. One doesn't need to know whether it's true or not. All one needs to know is, what are they going to do to us based on their pretense that it is true, and based on persuading the rest of the world it is true? And we know what they're going to do. They're using this to starve us, to stop us traveling, and to make us more dependent on government, which is, and then they'll probably use that as an excuse to bring in.
And have you seen all? It all makes sense. All the way that they've been shutting down our own energy self-sufficiency. So obviously, we stopped drilling in the North Sea. They not only stopped fracking, but they actually disabled the existing fracking mines. I think they poured concrete down them, so to take them out of commission altogether, so they could never be reopened. And, you know, to put them out of danger of being recommissioned at any point. So it wasn't just a case of, yeah, we won't be doing that because it causes earthquakes and people don't like that. It was a case of, let's go with the anti-fracking sentiment that's currently running and put it beyond ever being resurrected again. So that the complete shutdown of any self-sufficiency now makes perfect sense. So they say we're completely dependent on energy from outside, and that's being cut off. So yeah, what can we do?
I one realizes now, and I think one sort of suspected at the time that was one of the functions of globalism. They invented globalism to make us all dependent on, well, to stop us being self-sufficient, and to make us dependent on these supply chains,
during COVID, everything was in lockstep. So the vaccine was, it was global, wasn't it? Everyone had the same, well, different brand names, but coming out all at the same time, at the same pace, with the same results. But everyone had the same rules. Lockdown happened at roughly the same time for everyone. So yeah, the globalist thing was, they've been tinkering with it around the edges for ages, but now it all seems to be up and running nicely, thank you very much. And we'd ironed out all the problems. We know how to deal with dissenters, and we'll get it right next time.
Yeah, we know their names as well, because podcasts. At least during the COVID nonsense, we had the opportunity of opting out, like not taking the vaccines. Pretty much. I mean, apart from the people who were more or less coerced into doing so, but most of us did actually have a choice. So we could sort of protest and defy the system. But I'm not sure how easy it's going to be defying a system which says, well, there's no petrol, so you can't drive. What are we supposed to do? Like, well, I'm going to bicycle really fast instead.
There will be a run on bicycle sales. Everyone will have a bike. I wonder how easy it is to start refining your own oil. I mean, I know it's not impossible to make your own sort of diesel out of cooking oil and things like that.
Or building a derrick in your...
Well, nodding a donkey thing.
I'm surrounded by some land. I wonder if there's any oil underneath. That would be so good.
That would be great, wouldn't it?
Be great, but
a great thing to be self-sufficient in.
Yeah, but then you'd have to refine it, and it'd be quite a business, I think.
Yeah, even things like food production, though. I mean, you know what? Obviously, why my band is called Unregistered Chickens, because they don't even want you getting your own eggs. So the
I know, so
they can find out anyone who's got little small holdings and is making their own food. They need to know where you are so they can come round and kill your livestock and probably kick over your vegetable patch while they're there.
Apparently, during the war, I think Mike Yeadon mentioned this stat that by the end of the war, 1/3 of the economy was black market, which is quite a lot, and also heartening in indicates how widespread flouting the government's regulations becomes. Even a kind of law-abiding populace won't take it. But you think about during the Second World War, there were many, many more abattoirs, facilities for slaughtering livestock. Now you've got there's very limited number of places where you can kill animals, and I suppose in extremis people would be slaughtering them on the quiet, but it would they've as you say, they've deliberately removed all the tools that we might have had to be self-sufficient on a kind of local in local communities.
I mean, it used to be that like a row of terraced houses would have a pig between them in a sty at the end, and it would live on scraps. It would eat all their waste food. So again, there's no food going to waste. And then I suppose it would either be taken away to slaughter, or a travelling slaughterman would come and do it. The butcher would know how to butcher completely. But that level of self-sufficiency, it's due a comeback, isn't it?
I think the thing that upsets me about the coming horror is, well, quite a few things upset me actually, but one of them is the smugness of the bicycle wankers in their lycra. They should be going, yeah, finally we've got the cars off
the
road.
We've got our moment.
It's our moment in the sun. And
our time has arrived.
We've got these special things on our bicycle shoes, which link us to the pedals, and we're really good. Like
cleats.
Oh, what a horrible thing to have. Cleats. And the bit I'm really not looking forward to is when you start seeing articles in the newspapers by columnists saying, well, I know it's a bit of a nuisance not being able to drive to the shops anymore, but I'm rather enjoying this new pollution-free... Because they will, you know that they
get... the first few months of lockdown. It was glorious sunshine, and everyone was at home, almost like it was planned.
Well, they control the weather, Dick.
Yeah.
I didn't ask Germ about that actually. I mean, he was just. I'm actually very suspicious of people who don't believe in chemtrails. Just as I'm suspicious of people who don't believe in God. Very suspicious of... Actually, do you know what? I can think of a few people that I rate who actually still believe, who still believe that, that about the moon stuff, the moon bollocks.
There are some people that you do rate who believe in the moon.
If I'm right, there is... I've had her on the podcast a few times. Somebody called Elizabeth Nixon.
Yeah,
she's great. She was a time journalist, I think, or a life journalist. I forget one of the two. Very bad of me not to remember. I think she still believes in Apollo, but she's not. She's not a wrong'un.
Ultimately, does it matter? And does it actually matter? What shape the world is.
The
thing that does matter is the fact that if you realize you've been lied to, you ask that question, well, what else have we been lied to about? And also it's the whole God thing. If Earth is flat, then it's the only flat thing around, and man is the center of the universe, and we're a lot more important than we've been told. So yeah, in that respect, it does matter. But actually, it shouldn't affect whether or not you can get on with someone if they believe in the moon.
No, I agree with that. I think the answer to your questions is yes and no. It doesn't. It, in the great scheme of things, it doesn't matter. If you're like us and you're just like live and let live, I just want to get on with people and do our own thing. At the same time, there is no question that our movement, the truth movement, whatever you want to call it, is very, very heavily infiltrated by bad actors. And although it's not a sure sign that somebody is a wrong'un, it's a tell, and it's something to keep at the back of your mind. So on the chemtrails thing, for example, I mean, it's so obvious to me that chemtrails are real and they're happening and that they're deliberately poisoning us, and it's not coming out of just jet fuel. That's just an excuse. Therefore, anyone it just podcasts on this, like Germ, I'm thinking, well, mate, I love you, but that does make me more suspicious of you than I would have been had you been sensible on it. That's all I mean. I think that one needs to be alert to signs that somebody might not be what they are. And I don't mean to single out Germ as an example. I just mean that these are, it's like, why did I stop believing in Julian Assange? What was the moment when I knew that he was not to be trusted? And it was when he wouldn't acknowledge 9/11.
I didn't realize that had happened, and I've always been to neutral on Assange.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. You don't have to think about these people, really. It's like, I keep saying about, like, Tucker. Just because I'm pretty sure he's CIA doesn't mean I don't love him and I wouldn't love to be on his podcast.
Mm.
I think most of us real people are quite live and let live, and not in the business of saying stuff like some podcaster said about me the other day, you know, that because I went on a trip to Russia, that therefore that's a sign that I'm a baddie. I'm thinking, actually, you know what? If the Russians want to pay for you and me to go out there and do Dick and James go to Russia, and we drink raw milk, and I don't know, attend Orthodox services, and I'm not going to be going, well, my principles.
what will my fans think?
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, my fans are going to be cool about this. They're going to want to see they're going to want to see this show. Yeah. What's your problem? I don't really see that I have a duty to anybody else in this sphere to some cause other than the truth, as insofar as
if you started thinking that way, you'd be cancelling half your guests, and you wouldn't be the podcaster that you are. Yeah. And it would be very dull. You'd be constantly thinking, well, I can't really do that because, and it, the because wouldn't be for the right reasons.
No, I mean, I wouldn't. I really try not to lie, but you know, I don't lie about stuff.
No,
it's almost a fault.
It is a fault, and that's why. So I'm curious. I'm trying to find out about stuff, but that's it. I don't set myself up to be. Well, obviously I am the best podcaster in the awake world. In the world. Hello, but that said, it's not like I feel that subject to any rules other than tell the truth and be entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
and do what
let that be the whole rule.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm going to forget to do this if I don't do it now.
Do it. What is it?
I don't know when this podcast's going out, but we've got a gig in Dorset.
Yeah.
Look, that's us.
That's a very nice.
This is almost like a digital poster, isn't it?
I like your font.
Yes, I found that for a reenactment thing I was doing. I liked it so much, I carried on using it for other things. But we're playing in a very awake pub in Bridport, which in itself is a lovely awake town in Dorset. We're playing at the Crown Inn Tuesday evening, 21st of April. So this is coming up this Tuesday. And we're hoping to raise enough money to fill the tanks with petrol and get back home again to Herefordshire. So
you might be able to do it at today's prices, but by the time you get there...
Yeah, I know. This is part of the problem. If I came back with some free-range eggs as well, it might make it all that much more worthwhile.
It was very sad that that nice bakery closed down. Airport because of eco regulations.
Did it?
The council forced them. They made it uneconomical for them to use the. I forget the details now, but it was the local council's fault basically.
Bastards.
They completely screwed them over, and they've been going for generations.
Yeah. I shall have to ask.
Something to do with keeping their. It was. Inefficient, the oven system they were using.
Oh,
it was,
God.
It was, yeah.
Right.
It required sort of being on earlier in the small hours. I forget the details, but you'll get it. And
right.
Yeah, it's very sad.
I shall ask the Booths about it because Andy's sisters live down there. That's why we've got that connection.
The only other problem with that part of the world, apart from the fact that they've closed the nice bakery, is how far it is away from everything.
Yeah, tell me about it. It's going to be quite a schlep, but yeah. we'll take the gigs where we can get them.
No, we're quite.
Because the next one after that is Stand in the Light, and that's in the Lake District, which is also a little bit of a drive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, local to be good.
When Stand in the Light?
Sorry?
When?
Next month, I think late May. I should know because Daz was probably listening to this and screaming the date at me. But yes, it's the wonderful in the Lake District.
Our psychic powers.
Hmm?
Speak to me, Daz. Speak to me, Daz.
I should have brought the bloody diary down with me. That's terrible, isn't it?
Can't hear you. I don't know. What? No. December? No.
Oh, talking of Daz, you had Christian Sparks on, and Daz is a big fan.
Yeah, I listen, Dick. I like Chris Sparks. I think he's clearly a man of faith. But have you listened to the Alex Thompson podcast they did?
No, I've got to listen to both of them.
Okay.
I don't buy his, not worldview, but his Christian view. I know it is a...
There are various things that, I mean, my immediate response was when Christopher started talking to me about demons.
Is it Christopher, not Christian?
Christopher
Sparks. Sorry, I'm thinking
when he told me that,
is the Christian.
Oh, yeah, he discovered that demons don't exist.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's complete bollocks.
Yeah, because we know.
Another slight thing that put me off is he's one of those Christians that knows to the second when it was that Jesus came into his life. And there's this vibe they give off, like, if you don't know the exact moment when Jesus came into your life and he's your personal friend and you're filled with the Holy Spirit evermore, then you're not really in the game. And I just think that's just kind of vaunting and slightly sort of unchristian arrogance is I think. Maybe it may be sincere, maybe heartfelt, but it's not the sort of thing that you should be laying on other people as if it kind of...
Well, every variation of Christianity thinks they've got it right. So you've got to at least accept that they can't all be right. But I still go with my milk analogy. You know, they're all different types of milk. Like C of E is skimmed, Catholics are semi-skimmed, and we're raw.
That was like an arrow to my heart.
Well, you got your service the other day. You were telling me about your skimmed milk service.
That wasn't... I think that was skimmed milk which had been watered down, actually, and probably a bit... Slightly.
Well, look, just be grateful it wasn't oat milk.
Well, maybe it was oat milk. Maybe that was the problem.
Well, no, I think oat milk would have to be something like a Christian cult that, you know, isn't even actually Christian. But I think the actual forms of Christianity, you're getting your milk, but are you getting it in as good a form as you possibly can?
You want it to be bioavailable. So just briefly on the Sparksy thing. So I analysed it with Alex Thompson afterwards, and Alex explained to me that I think the Dutch Reformed Church, which he's familiar with, or one branch of one of the sort of the more Protestant Dutch churches, they won't admit you unless you can tell them. They quiz you on when it was that Jesus came into your life, and you've got to convince them that this was real, and that so it's obviously a thing among a certain variety, right, of evangelical. But the other point that Alex made, and I thought this was the killer point, which I tried to articulate in my podcast with both Sparks and the other one, you know, Sir Escanor, you know, the one who said that Jesus is a pedo or high on drugs or something.
I won't listen to that. I don't want to upset myself.
It's not really worth the candle, not worth the effort. It was only worth my listening to in order to later have it rebutted by Alex Thompson, because these ideas are abroad. And I mean, Sir Escanor was not the first guy to put out this theory that I've got this new... I've read the original Greek, and I can tell you that the Gospels mean nothing like you've ever read before, and this is what they actually mean. So the point Alex made was that in the 17th century, for example, the sort of 16th and 17th centuries, which was sort of the heyday of Bible translation, the level of Hebrew scholarship and Greek scholarship was an order of magnitude greater than pretty much anything today. So that by the age of eight, these boys would be fluent in Greek. By 13, they would be capable of not just translating from English into Greek, Greek and back into English again, but they'd also be capable of writing in different Greek styles, in the style of particular authors, you know, write Greek in the style of, I don't know, Sophocles or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the idea that this generation of scholars missed the point of that, you know, mistranslated, didn't understand what it was really about, is just absurd. And the idea that
I suppose the thinking that we're used to is that everything that we have now is better than anything back then. They were virtually monkeys back then, you know, just sort of dragging sticks through the dirt and just starting to learn. And we're so much brighter now with our years of scholarship and AI, having had the universities for so long. But you just need to take a look at the universities to know that actually we've gone way, way backwards. We're nowhere near as good as we were.
I think the more seductive argument for us batshit crazy tinfoil hat loon conspiracy theorists is that we've so got used to the idea that everything we know about the world is wrong and everything is a lie, that it makes absolute sense to us that all the Bible translations would be a lie too. And that, yes, maybe there is this kind of new secret key to all mythologies, which are open to us and enable us to completely, you know, to understand Christianity for the message of the Gospels for the first time. And it's seductive, but it sort of doesn't make sense given what I said about the scholarship back in the day.
Yeah.
No, it's that's interesting point to get your head around, is that Greek scholarship would have been that good back then. I hadn't considered that, but
so you can see why Daz has leapt onto Christopher Sparks. And a few other people have. I mean, I had him on the podcast because various people had sent me these emails saying, you must have this guy on your podcast. You're going to get your mind blown. Everything you and Dick are on the wrong track about orthodoxy and you should listen to this guy. And then you do listen to the guy and some of it's persuasive. And at the same time, you think, well, why are you embracing this guy so much? What is it that how are you judging that his translation is better? What is it? And it seems to me that it's more about they have this idea about what they want the Bible and Christianity to mean, and it seems that this guy's translation accords more with theirs because it's more anti-traditional and whatever. They don't believe in the Trinity, or they don't believe in this or that. And yes, here's a guy who's produced a Bible where there's no Trinity either. So hey, isn't that good? And you're thinking, hang on a second. Well, this is just your guy is speaking to your prejudices, and that's why you like him.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, you've got to take him and say, right, there's you, and then there's all these guys on Mount Athos who would say otherwise. I mean, you're going to completely dismiss them out of hand. But then the moment you've got that appeal to authority, you've got to say, well, there's the whole of the Vatican that thinks the way they do. And you're going for that thing that you've warned others of in other things, for the whole appeal to authority. And then you can't just say, well, the majority of people think Christianity works this way, therefore that must be right. It could be a minority sect that have got it 100% right, but ultimately you've got to feel around with your heart, haven't you?
It's a mission. It's a continual mission. You're trying to use your discernment, and you're trying to navigate all these obstacles, which I'm sure the devil puts in your way.
Well, my, and I don't want to bore on about it, because we've got to finish soon. And yeah. I've deliberately tried not to bore on about orthodoxy today, so I hopefully have achieved that. But
until
I didn't
now,
just land on it one day. I've been fishing around and swirling around the edges of it for quite a while before I decided to actually enter the church, because I knew that would be quite a decisive moment. So, yeah, I it's not completely new to me, and I've been looking around at it, but there's nothing that I found about it so far that is giving me negative signals. So, yeah, it's discernment, as you're saying, constant questioning. But to some degree, the questioning has got to end, and you've got to listen to what you're being told and try to take it on board before dismissing it.
Yeah.
So I've got to go through a period of stop asking stupid questions about things and just listen to the way that we do it. And then maybe when you get your head around, then you can start asking questions.
Except you won't be able to, because then you'll be indoctrinated.
Well, there's going to be indoctrination anyway, but I'm at the point where I'm asking to be indoctrinated. There's things I don't understand. Explain it to me. And if that's indoctrination, well, it's got to come eventually. But who you choose to indoctrinate
Who's your spiritual father, by the way?
What do you mean?
Haven't you got a spiritual father?
My priest.
I thought in the Orthodox Church you were each allocated a spiritual father.
Well, you're meant to take on a baptismal name.
No, an actual spiritual father. A bit like, you know the story in Everyday Saints? Have you got to the end yet?
Yes.
This was the story I read the other night, and it made me want to cry, actually, because it was just such a good story. Do you remember the extraordinary story about the aristocratic Russian exile bishop who later became a monk, and he lived in America a lot of his time, and he had a British passport, and he kept coming on these flying visits and he ran a radio station, I think, out of London, broadcasting to the Orthodox world.
Yeah.
And he comes back to Russia sometime on one occasion, and Tikhon, whatever his rank was there, was accompanying him. And the problem with this Russian priest was that this bishop turned monk was that he couldn't say no to anything because as part of his vows he was told that he said I'm not sure about my vows of obedience because I'm a bishop and I'm already too senior to be and the man who made him a monk said, then what you must do is your obedience is to whatever the path God has chosen to you at any given time. So whenever people came and begged him to do this or that, he always said yes. Mm. And he got coaxed out to this remote part of Russia to consecrate this church or something like that. And on the way there, they came upon this accident, a motorbike accident. Do you remember?
And, I do, yeah.
And the pillion passenger was dead. And the dead man who'd been traveling pillion was the son of the guy driving the motorbike, and the son was absolutely distraught. And this monk bishop got out and said, "Well, can I help? I can give the last rites." Was he a member of the Orthodox Church? And the son said, "Well, this is under communism, so it was much less obvious in those days." And the son said, "Well, yes, my father was, I think, religious." And they said, who was his spiritual father? And they said, well, he did have a spiritual father. It was this man, this monk who did a radio show from London. And that was the guy who, yeah, anyway, I just thought it was spooky and weird.
There were a lot of little things like that in that book. And the two books that you gave me have just only hardened my resolve to carry on with this. And it's not an easy journey, but books like that with the so-called coincidences that aren't coincidences just make me realise that it's the closest I've encountered so far to feeling right in my heart. But
Well, the next episode, Dick, I expect you to be wearing the kind of proper black cap with the beard. Good. Well, everyone, if it's still time to book, whenever I put this out, go to see the Unregistered Chickens in Dorset.
It's not a book, it's just to turn up. I think it's probably free, and the it probably is a collection on the day. But come down to Dorset, or if you're within striking distance, you'll already know the place.
When is it again?
Tuesday.
Oh.
Tuesday the 21st of April.
Dick, that's like, it's the 17th today.
Yeah.
This is never going to go out in that.
I've found you put them out on the same day sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, blimey. Well, I could do, but it just means, all it means.
No, don't go out of your way. Let's just hope it was a great gig. And it was absolutely full. And Andy didn't forget the words, and I didn't forget the notes.
You weren't massacred by terrorists.
Can you imagine sort of Iranian terrorists coming in off the coast?
They would do that because they're really incensed by
their evil.
They've got these sleeper cells. I read it in the newspapers everywhere.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me.
Okay.
Right. I've got to get back and check the aerial on the space shuttle.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be coming into land and I need to make sure I can...
Off Great Yarmouth.
Off Great Yarmouth, and I'm going to make a phone call to Prime Minister Keir Starmer. He is still Prime Minister, isn't he?
He is.
He was when we took off.
No, he is. I'm just trying to think what other news there might have... anything else you want to find out? Starmer is still Prime Minister, I'm pleased
to
say.
Okay, right. Fantastic news. Anything on Peter Mandelson? I mean, has anyone been talking about him lately?
Yes, I funny you should say that. I think that Peter Mandelson is being used as an excuse to get rid of Keir Starmer.
Ah, right. Well, I should imagine we'll be replacing him with someone much better, someone really competent.
Yeah. It's all good news. When you splash down, you'll be able to...
God willing.
That's true.
Because remember, it's very, very tricky.
It really is. Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope the heat shields hold up.
Me too.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to get a bit warm in there, isn't it?
It might do. Yeah.
Watch for it sizzling when it hits the ocean. That's the way that you'll know it's got really hot. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Right. Bye.
Bye. Bye then, brother.
Bye bye. See ya. A lot of you have very kindly been asking, what's the best way we can support you? So thank you for caring and thank you for wanting to support me. There is now a new, better way of supporting me. Some of you subscribe via Substack, some of you are on Patreon, some of you are even on Subscribestar, and those all work in their way. The problem is, I mean, take Substack as an example. Substack has been a great community for like-minded folk, but it is heavily controlled by the enemy. They deboost people like me. They want normie voices. They don't want really alternative people being given any prominence. Plus, of course, they get a cut of your generous donations. So here's an idea. If you want to, you can now subscribe direct on my website at jamesdellingpole.co.uk. The website's been running for quite a while, but thanks to my assistant Andrew, it's now got new features where you can subscribe directly to me. You get access to all my old archive material. You get my podcasts as they come out, and you can comment on the podcasts, and you can communicate with me probably more directly than you can elsewhere. I think it's probably the best way forward. Also, it obviates the risk of my being suddenly randomly closed down by some of these other websites. I mean, they're not our friends. So if you want to support me direct, go to jamesdellingpole.co.uk and sign up there. Thank you, my sharklings. I love you all, but I love... You know, I'm not supposed to have favourites, but I do kind of extra love those of you who make the effort to support me, because without your support, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. So, thank you.